And it is another week. This is Andrew Wood, as always, sitting in talking about life and hope. Executive Director of Hope Resource Center, thank you so much for tuning in. We are today joined by a good friend and pastor here in the city of Knoxville. Hunter Wright, thank you so much for taking the time out to join me.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad to. As I was telling you before we came on air that a lot of times I get on here on Tuesday afternoons and I just rant and rave about things that are going on that, and I thought, you know, I need to have a guest on where we're not ranting and raving. We are actually, talking about.
Matches your hair color, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we are, that's what I want to do today is talk about that. If you want to learn more about hope, you can at investinghope.com. You can, of course, listen to the archive of this show, via podcast. You can do that at iTunes, Google Play, wherever podcasts are found. You can also find it on the TuneIn app and investinghope.com, or you can listen to live every single Tuesday afternoon at 5 o'clock on Joy 620. We would welcome that as well. So Hunter, you recently made a name change.
Yeah.
Formerly Ignition Church, now Maker City Church, in a new building. Adoption's fine. All these brand new things happening in the, in the Wright family. And so walk us through, let's start with, the name change. So I've known you since, you know, as Ignition Church, since I've been at Hope Resource Center. And then in the last few months or so, which I'm sure it was a longer process than that, you know, made the move to Maker City. Walk us through that, that process.
Yeah, it was, so it's a fairly long, process, I guess you could say, as all changes are.
Sure.
When they just show up on the surface, there's a lot below them. Which is why we're, I think, so impatient often with change in our lives that there's a lot of roots that God's working on. So for us, the name change really for me, primarily was about matching who we were. Mm-hmm. The original name Ignition, was something I came up with, just out of college and knowing that eventually I was going to start a church and I wanted a church that was exciting, you know, and just, I thought of like, what's a cool, exciting name, and Ignition seemed like that to me. And I think I had a friend of mine at the time who had named his youth ministry Ignition. And so anyway, that kind of stuck for years. And then we got here, and one of the things they tell you, whoever trains you as a church planner, they talk about, you don't ever know the church you're going to have until you get it.
Yep.
Shows up. And so, you know, we got here, we began doing work. It was different than we expected. And really ultimately what happened when we arrived was I began to be, kind of confronted, to no surprise with some of the failings of the church, which I was not opposed to. I wanted to hear about them because I wanted to do it better. In fact, the church that sent us out, the pastor told me, you know, the problems we have here. I want you to do it better. Don't repeat the same problems. And so I kind of came here with that in mind. And, but ultimately the name change is about representing what I feel like, Jesus really wants the church to be representative of. And really what the North America really ultimately needs, which is multiplication. There's a lot of churches, I think, that are, I guess you could say they're like cul-de-sacs along the Great Commission Highway. You know, and there's like well-appointed cul-de-sacs.
Right.
I mean, they're just really nice. But ultimately, it seems that we're just pulling Christians off of that Great Commission Highway, if you will, and just giving them a place to hang out, right? Rather than actually just being a place that just continually sends people down that highway, right? It's amazing. You know, churches that we build these days are amazing with great organization and great vision and great experiences. And yeah, it's, you know, it can just be a really nice place to stay, you know, rather than be a place that you want to go be sent, from. So just kind of looking at that and recognizing, man, we're really struggling. The model that we're using, in this model of cul-de-sacs is not reaching, not even reaching America at this point. You know, we're not keeping up. The meter's not moving. So just wrestling with that for years, honestly. And I thought to myself, really everything needs to change if we're going to really embrace that. We can't just change a couple things. And so I thought we ultimately need to change our name too, to just make sure that in no way, shape or form are could you look at us and assume that we're just a event that happens that you come attend?
Right.
You know? And so I want everything to represent that. And so for me, Maker City, it comes from the two words that Jesus used to describe the church, which is a city on a hill, mm-hmm. and also a disciple makers.
Right.
And so that's what it really represents for us, that we are a city on a hill of disciple makers, you know, disciples who make disciples, who make disciples, right. churches who plant churches, who plant churches, multiplication. But at the same time, it represents Knoxville, which yep. I thought was really, really cool. Because Knoxville, is being branded, I guess you should say rebranded right. from the scruffy city yeah. to the maker city.
Right.
And we actually talked to the people, who came up with that name, Maker City, and who were using it for some of the little entrepreneur clubs that were getting together. And we talked with them and cleared that with them, and they were excited about it. So, yeah, so we went with that because we really feel like, man, it represents who we are. It represents where we mm-hmm. are, and it represents what God has called us to do. And so there's a lot more to the story
sure,
than that,
oh, yeah.
but that's really just kind of the kind of overview of why.
And in that process, y'all were looking for new spaces, new venue spaces. And you came to where you're meeting now, which I would argue, and I've told everybody that either whether they want to listen or not, that I believe it is the prettiest church building in the city of Knoxville.
Yeah, thanks.
In my opinion, which carries a lot of weight, in my mind, it is the prettiest church building in Knoxville. And it was built in 1915, is that correct?
1915, yeah.
Over on Fifth Avenue. Yep. And, man, folks, it is gorgeous. So you're in this building. You go from meeting downtown, I guess at the convention center.
Yeah, we're at the convention center. So we just moved a couple blocks.
And then, so moved just a little bit over. But now what's that been like as a pastor that is trying to, you know, make change? And anytime we make change with anything, you know, there's always like, what are we doing? Why, you know, mm-hmm. why are we rocking the boat? Why are we making any changes? And y'all changed the name and a venue space. And so what's that been like? Have you seen kind of where you're at now? Have you seen an influx of people saying, oh, this building that's just been sitting here for so long
right.
now has life in it?
Yeah. Yeah. It was really cool, process. We'd been searching for a space for probably 2 years, working with a great realtor. But we're just really struggling to find places downtown. We could have been anywhere. There's plenty of, you know, sure. abandoned shopping centers and stuff that we yep. could have been in, but we just did not want to leave downtown. We just felt like we needed to be downtown, to reach one of the fastest growing areas of mm-hmm. our city and also one of the most unchurched areas of our city. So we wanted to stay downtown. And so we were in the process for a long time. And, I was praying with some missionary, partners of ours, and, we were praying over that space, or praying over just having a building in general, and they kind of said, hey, God just gave me a vision, both of them, husband and wife, and said, somebody's going to approach you about a building. And I was like, that's cool. It didn't yeah. happen to me, but that's right. awesome. You know, thanks for the yeah.
Glad you feel that way.
Glad you feel it.
yeah. yeah.
So, but it really was. It was actually only a couple weeks later that a family friend of ours, Mark Hines of Dewhurst Properties, approached us and just said, hey, would you want to meet me over at this space? And he just gave me the address. I didn't even know what it was. I knew about the building, but sure. I didn't know what it was. And then, you know, he met me there, and I was like, what? No way. And, so we ended up working out details on a lease and all that kind of stuff. But really for me, the really cool thing was, we were in that process of name change, and, I was dreaming about, being a community, a church where we had a story of baptism happening every mm-hmm. single week.
Right.
I'm a visionary. So I just think like, yeah, baptism is every week. I don't think like, well, what is that going to require?
yeah. That requires,
that requires like, yeah. 10, and for us, it was like 10 hours of labor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Setting up a, you know, a portable tank outside.
Yeah.
Right.
In
the wintertime. I'm not thinking any of this. I'm just thinking, yes, Lord, baptism is every week.
Yeah.
And then I walk into that space and there's a baptismal tank in the, you know, altar stage
right up front.
And I was just like, wow, God, you really are making a way.
You can probably even heat that
us.
Water.
Yeah, I think we can. So we actually do heat our outdoor one as well, but yeah. It's jerry-rigged for sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it's a really, really cool story. And we moved in and we actually did baptisms the first week we moved in, and they were multiplication baptisms. So it was, you know, somebody that had met Jesus, somebody that we had baptized was baptizing somebody that she led to Jesus, and then that girl got baptized, but then she stayed in the tank because even though she'd only been following Jesus for 9 months, she'd already led another friend to Jesus. So it was,
wow. Yeah.
It was like literally seeing three generations happen at the same time. And so it was really, really beautiful picture for us to kind of launch as Maker City in this new space. It was so great. So it's really been exciting for us as a church, to go through the rebranding process, yeah, knowing that it's intentional, not just a surface change. And so it's brought a lot of clarity to who we are and why we do what we do. And as a result of that, it really hasn't been in a change that we've kind of, you know, felt was uphill at
right.
all. It really has been momentum building. We haven't lost anybody from our community in the move. We have grown. We didn't grow at first, which I was kind of glad because we were still trying to figure
sure.
out how we're going to use that space, and get used to it. And, but now that we're like fully kind of unboxed, if you will, mm-hmm. moved in, yeah, there have been a lot more families that have started to come and a lot more, just in general, a lot more people that are coming. So we're excited, just to be able to welcome people, you
yeah.
know, into our home. We were always passionate about being able to create a great space for people, but sometimes when you're at the convention center and they're doing, you know,
I understand.
they're yeah. doing, what's it called? Comic-Con and they're
yeah, yeah.
wanding everybody.
Yeah.
When you're wanding your first time guest, it's, you know
good.
What I mean?
Not great.
You know, it's,
not
hey,
great.
It's secure, that, but
we had patting
people down.
Yeah. We had an event.
We do pat on the back, not a pat on
yeah.
the, you know.
Yeah. We had an event and, for Hope. And when we get there, we didn't know there was another event going on in the same space. When we get there, there's this long line for an open bar. And I was like, oh no. Oh no, this is not. And so our donors, our supporters, you have some of them, they're like, awesome.
Yeah,
you have
man.
An open bar.
Come
and
on,
then
man.
You have others that are saying, I'm never coming back again
right,
because
right.
you have an open bar. And so those are things that you can't control. And the same thing with Comic-Con, you're like, oh no, that
yeah.
they're getting wanded. This is their first time
it's
here.
Their first time.
Welcome. Now,
welcome.
Now get on the wall and spread them.
Spread them.
that's a weird way to welcome people. So we're,
gonna put an information packet
in
your pocket while I'm spreading.
That's right. That's right. That's just part of the process. But as I'll say from the outside looking in, what's been cool about it is just to watch that, transformation. And for me, I'm always watching these, how people make change and how people have those conversations and how people kind of cast vision and lead in that. And from just my objective standpoint, it appears that a lot of thought and prayer was put into that. And I can appreciate that. And so hats off for that. I think sometimes we sense, especially as ministry leaders, we sense a change needs to occur and we jump.
Yeah.
And instead of saying, okay, we sense this right now. But maybe we're not ready to make that jump yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so giving time for that to get there. And that's what when I hear, you know, that's a long process or it's taken us 2 years to kind of figure out those things. To me, that's not going, wow, that took you a while. That's me going, praise God that you took the time to kind of pause and go, okay, what direction does the Lord have for us and what direction is he taking us in? So when we come back from break, I want to shift kind of from that. I just wanted to give people context of kind of who you are, what the church is doing. When we come back, I want to talk about kind of the personal adoption story of you and your wife and your son and that process and the heaviness that comes with that, but the beauty that we find in that of the gospel picture in adoption. And we'll talk about that with Hunter Wright when we come back. So as we continue the conversation today with Pastor Hunter Wright of Maker City Church, I wanted to shift focus a little bit because obviously this show, you know, we talk about life and the importance of life and adoption and foster care and kind of not just being kind of bumper sticker pro-life, but all in, wanting to engage in that process. And you and your wife over the last couple years have really, you know, through prayer and different things, you thought, okay, the Lord's calling us to adopt. And walk us through, and I know we've had conversations multiple times mm-hmm. throughout that process, but walk us through what that's been like. And then finally to the culmination that happened just a few weeks ago with the finality of it all. But mm-hmm. but walk us through when you and your wife finally said, look, this is what we're going to do. What
yeah.
was that moment like
yeah.
to then getting a call, hey, it's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, there were so many moments. Honestly, it's one of those things where it's hard to even remember kind of the order of the dominoes moments. I think for us, like a lot of people who end up adopting, it started with infertility. Mm-hmm. That was the start of the journey. And, you know, and I just want to say that that's never a wrong reason to consider adoption. You know what I mean?
Right.
Considering adoption, no matter what the reason that you're doing it, it's always going to be a good thing. And, so that was kind of where it started for us. And we just began to consider it, pray about it. It was something that had kind of always been on my heart because of the picture of the gospel. But it's a commitment. It's a mm-hmm. process. You don't just do it because you like the story.
Right.
So we prayed about it. I felt the thing that kind of shifted in my heart that made me feel like now is the time to pursue it was, kind of knowing I didn't want it to feel like plan B. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to feel, and you know, ultimately like it was the plan A for us at the time. And I think that the shift that happened in my heart was I realized that it wasn't a matter of I'm going to find a family. It was God has a family for us and I'm going to, you know, essentially going to get my son, mm-hmm. you know, not that I, you know, going to a store and getting one,
but
really that there, my son is out there.
Yep.
Right. So start the journey to find him, right? To get connected with him. And I'm intentionally not using the word rescue because that's definitely not what adoption is.
Sure.
I didn't rescue my son from anything.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was just God's process and bringing us together as a family. So that was my journey. And I waited on my wife, Christina, to have her own, experience and hers was a little bit different, but ultimately it was the same idea that I have a child for you. And this is the way, you know, that I'm going to bring him into your family. And for us, there was a strong belief that it was going to be a son, really unique, not something that we ever really kind of thought that would be a part of our journey, but really did begin to feel very strongly like God wanted to bring a son into our family. Mm-hmm. And the name Benjamin came to us, because of the story of Benjamin in scripture where, Rachel is giving birth and, she actually passes away as she's giving birth. And she originally names, Benjamin Ben-Onan, which means son of sorrow, because mm-hmm. she's of course, losing her life in the process of giving birth. But when Jacob meets his son, he actually changes the name from Ben-Onan to Benjamin, which means not son of sorrow, but son of strength, mm-hmm. actually son of right hand, which is a strong hand blessing. And so ultimately what Jacob is experiencing there, and then this is, you know, quite a transformation for him, but he's saying, that God is going to birth strength out of sorrow. And so for us, that's a lot of the picture of adoption was for us and our family was this season of sorrow that infertility was. And it's a deep, deep sorrow,
sure.
especially for women, way more than I can even understand. I can't even really give proper amount to the description of the pain it is for women. But we had this promise of God's going to birth strength out of this season of sorrow. And so we were waiting on our Benjamin and we went through the whole process and, it was funny. We were told that it was going to take us like 2 years to get matched and then like 6 months to finalize. And it was literally the exact opposite.
Of that,
it was
right.
like
yeah.
6 months to be matched and then 2 years to finalize. And so the 6 months, was super quick. Cause honestly, I say 6 months and it was 6 months from the time that we, you know, finished our home study, with Bethany and we're approved as a wedding family and then, you know, get our book together and all that kind of stuff. But, when our amazing, wonderful birth mom, chose us, which is a super cool story because she was the unicorn of birth moms where she, you know, had been going to all of her visits and taking all her prenatals
right.
and she's just an amazing, amazing woman. And so she got all the books.
Yeah.
Like every family they had, she got all the books. And 37 to be exact. And she chose
wow.
ours one.
That's
just
awesome.
It. And then she gave the stack to her grandmother and her aunt, and they also both just chose us, which so
yeah.
super cool story there. But it was so funny because when she got the book, when she made the decision, she was due in a month.
Wow. Wow.
So, and then we didn't really find out for sure until like 2 weeks. So we had a 2 week pregnancy, essentially. Man. 2 weeks to get everything ready at the house and learn how to swaddle.
Yep.
You know, yep. So I was practicing swaddling
pillows. I have four kids and I'm still trying to figure that one out. So, yeah.
But all these friends come over and helping us out, like just dumping all this baby stuff on us, which we're so grateful for. But so yeah, it was a super, super short process on the front end. And we were there in the hospital and it was amazing. And we actually brought our son home on Mother's Day.
Wow.
So really, really beautiful, story. And he's been with us the whole time. But it was a 2 year process when it came to finalization.
When it was a 2 year process because of courts and,
yeah,
birth father and different things that go on in that. We don't have to go into all the nitty gritty of that.
But yeah, it's amazing how, it's just not easy. You know what I mean? You know, everything ultimately worked out exactly like we were praying for, which was beautiful. And we would definitely do it all over again, when it comes to the end result. But yeah, there's just a lot of people involved. There's a lot of lawyers involved and then the court systems. And so, you know, a lot of times it wasn't so much a matter of like, you know, we're fighting an enemy as it was just ultimately systemic.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of the broken part of adoption is not just the brokenness that a lot of times that it starts from. Because it doesn't always start with brokenness, but there is brokenness just in the separation right, between mother and child. And so there's always brokenness there, but then there's just brokenness in the system, how expensive it is, how complicated it is. And so, yeah, so for us, it really didn't, there were times maybe where it felt like we were fighting an enemy, but other times it's just like, you just hands up, like, I don't know what we can do differently because things just get rescheduled. And then the next reschedule is like 9 months later, you know?
Well, and the frustrating part is, and we hear this a lot, and you hear this anytime life and abortion issue is discussed, is, why isn't adoption just more out there? Why aren't more people doing it? Well, here's the thing. It's a process, and that's an understatement. And so it's not only a huge undertaking for the birth mom to even make that choice, which shows a lot of courage and bravery, but then for a family to be willing to go, okay, we'll spend the money, we'll go to these these different court appointments, and we'll fight and we'll fight and we'll fight, and then we think we have everything done, and then another letter comes in last minute or even past last minute, and that letter changes everything.
Right.
And so but what I love about that is your little boy for the rest of his life is going to know that mom and dad fought for him, and like you were saying, we came and got you. It was a And nothing was going to nothing was going to stop that from happening.
Right.
And so what I love, and we talked a couple weeks ago, and I asked, you know, hey, now that it's finalized, do you feel like a weight's been lifted? And I think your words were, I feel like I've climbed out of a dark hole or a cave.
Right.
And we're about to go to break. When we come back, I want to kind of unpack what that's like. Why the heaviness? And what freedom came within hearing and finally signing the paper, seeing the words, hey, this is it. This is now officially official in front of God and everybody in the law. This is our son. And I want to unpack what that weight was like coming off. We'll be back. So as we continue the conversation with Pastor Hunter Wright, we were talking before the break that we have, so adoption is final. It's been a 2 year process. You went from quickly, it seemed like, getting matched, amazing birth mom, and then probably assuming, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but probably assuming, hey, this is going to be quick then. Everybody told me it would take longer to get matched. We got matched, so boom, this is going to be done. And then it seemed like back during that time, every time I would talk to you, it was like,
another
letter was sent another meeting has to happen. Yep. Or we need to do this.
Yeah, exactly.
Or we need to do that. And so, so recently it was finalized, officially official.
Yeah.
Talk us through when you finally got word, not necessarily the day of, I'm sure the day of was something, but when you finally got word like, hey, we're scheduled, you're going to show up on this day and it's done. What was that day like when you got that word?
I think like a lot of moments, like this, it was surreal. Just being present. And that's one of those things where something shifts on paper. but it can take a little bit longer for it to shift in your heart and in your head. Cause your life is different, for sure after that moment. But you know, as a person of faith, it's one of those things where we kind of always believed it was going to ultimately end up there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was, oh man, there was just so many emotions. Honestly, what's funny is the day that sticks out in my mind more than the day of actual court, because that day it's like, you know, rushing around and being here, sure, and appearing before, you know, and, and pictures and all that kind of stuff. And it was a beautiful, fun day. But, yeah, the day honestly that sticks out in my mind and in my heart, it was actually, I think 2 weeks before the court date, and we were announcing to the church, that we were going to be finalizing. And we had ordered, my wife had ordered, as women are so amazing about this stuff, had ordered like some t-shirts for us, mm-hmm, as a family. And she found them on Etsy that said best day ever.
Right.
And in fact, the Etsy people made the one for our son for free, because actually didn't have, yeah, it in his size, but we told them our story and they said, we'll get it done.
Yeah.
And so, So we are all three wearing the same shirt that morning and getting ready to go out the door, and like, whew, like it hit me, mm-hmm, then, you know, as you know, kind of almost corny as it is to all be wearing the same shirt, just like a, you know, the family beach pictures, yep, or something like that every year,
yep,
but it was still, it's just that moment where it's like, this is family,
yeah,
you know, and it was like for real forever, you know, not going to change. We will be family. And we had to go out the door, so I didn't have a whole lot of time to sit in that moment, but I just remember it just like, boom.
Yeah.
And at first, I think the way it felt was it felt like there was a door that had been shut off, you know, in our house, so to speak, our metaphorical house, mm-hmm, that was now open, right? That was now unlocked, when it came to just the future, right? But the more that kind of time went on and I began to really, everything really began to sink in, is just everything's different. Not just one door that's different. And yeah, that's what you were talking about. The way I described it was like almost like coming out of a bunker.
Yeah.
And not that the bunker was, you know, depressing or dark or anything like that, because it was honestly a well-appointed,
sure,
bunker.
Sure.
It wasn't a bad life,
yeah,
you know, with our son. It was great. We had him with us at all times, and you know, as far as he knew, nothing was
right,
ever different. But if living in that space where you just don't know if the next time the court date comes, or even any time before then, he's going to have to leave, that it forces you to live in the present, which isn't a bad thing, to be in the moment,
right?
Because that's that moment is really all we're guaranteed, right? The moment is where the Spirit of God is. The moment is where revelation is. The moment is where life is happening. A lot of times, of course, we spend our time living in the past, running from it, or looking forward to some future, and we miss the present. So it was a great experience to be forced to live in the present and be grateful for every moment and take nothing for granted. That was great. But yeah, we weren't able to talk about dreams or the future or think about any of that stuff, and just the natural process of dreaming, you know?
Right.
And I think that is, as healthy as it is to be in the moment, it's also very, very healthy to be able to dream. You know, I think when it comes to, you know, God's economy, and grace, I think dreams are part of that. Dreaming for the future. Dreams are a large part of what we see happen with God's people,
yeah,
in scripture. But we were kind of in a survival place, you know, and you don't dream a lot when you're surviving. You're just living. So when things were finalized and no more court dates, no more letters, no more anything,
yeah,
everything is done. On that day, you know, definitely it was like, this is a whole, you know, whole new world.
Yeah.
New world.
Yeah.
It's just, wow, we can dream about the future.
The cool part about that is, and again, you know, Benjamin never probably sensed any of that, but there had
to. Cool thing actually though is people that, some of the chief childcare workers were actually saying that they've seen a real freedom.
Oh, really?
In him, and a real confidence.
Oh, wow.
That was birthed right at that moment.
So maybe he did sense it then.
Yeah. You know,
some way.
Yeah. I'm a firm believer in, you know, that God is a God of the body as well, you know, and energy, as Einstein proved, everything is energy. As chemists will tell us, everything is energy. But, that when, like when birth mom's energy changes, right? Because of the stress that's gone off her too, because it was a ton of stress on her, stress from everybody. But when that's gone, that's going to, it's going to shift something in him too. And I think that's probably a lot of what, maybe the explanation behind what happened. But, you know, either way, it's beautiful to see that,
it's really cool to watch that and know that, that even in the midst of the present and loving and all those, I can just imagine there was moments where you're rocking him or watching him sleep and going, you know, what's next month look like? What's next year look like? What is there another letter? Is there another meeting? Is there, could this be gone? Mm-hmm. And not in a sense of, I mean, I'm a dad to four, and every now and then it pops up, you know, what if something were to happen?
Yep.
But it's never in my mind like a court, you know, that this isn't my child or somebody else is going to step in. It's a, what if some, you know, catastrophe happens? And so not that all worry goes away as a parent, it never really goes away.
Right.
But there's a, there is a sense of, oh no, I can, you know, we can watch him walk down the aisle at graduation. Mm-hmm. We can, watch him get married. We can watch him, you know, fulfill those dreams. And it's, and talking about dreams, it's why at Hope when we have parenting classes, they make dream boards.
Come on.
Because we want these patients to, many have not had that dream.
Yeah.
We want them to know, hey, you can have your baby and your dreams. You don't have to pick one over the other. And so, that's very important for our, not just our children. It's important for us to be thinking about and walking through that. And I always make a joke. My mom, was the biggest champion of mine, still is the biggest champion of mine. And I wanted to play. I loved basketball and I was a good basketball player, but the Lord decided I was just going to stop growing. And so there was only so much this kid from Cornersville could do.
Right.
And so, but my mom, I mean, all the way up into high school was like, oh, you're going to play in the NBA. And that's probably not, I mean, I think there was a lot of lies in there. My mom believed it fully though. She believed in me. And I think back and what some of that did for me as a kid was it really built my confidence, not false confidence. Like I was, I was aware of where I was going to go and it wasn't going to be the NBA, but it did give me an opportunity to go, my mom believes in me. Mm-hmm. And whether it's that or something else, there's someone behind me. There's a reason to dream and believe in something coming. And so I think it's awesome that now you can sit in the present because you know tomorrow's there. Mm-hmm. In terms of we know he's got my last name.
Right.
And that's a big, big deal.
Yeah. It really is. Really is. And it's not even just that. I mean, yeah, we're not even just dreaming like, you know, as a family, we're just like dreaming again, you know, between husband and wife, which is a beautiful thing. And one that we, you know, it was a, you know, 2-year finalization and then, you know, 6-month matching process, but there were months before that, right? Or years before that where we were in the infertility process and wondering about that. So honestly, it's been like 6 years, bro.
Yeah.
Since we've like thought about like, oh yeah, dreams. What do we want to, you know, what do we believe that God wants to do through our life? So yeah, it's changed everything. You know,
well, I think it's an awesome story and that's why I wanted to talk about that today. Cause I do think definitely there's people that are going to listen to this that are dealing with infertility, thinking about adoption, thinking about foster care, but there's a really good chance there's a birth mom listening to this, that hopefully this will give her some comfort knowing that through that process, my child is loved and taken care of and
God's got a plan.
And so it's a beautiful thing that the Lord allows us to be a part of, that in the brokenness, in the messiness, in the post-Genesis 3 world that we live in, we get to see glimpses, and sometimes not just glimpses, but wide open views of freedom through the gospel and adoption's a beautiful thing. And so we'll talk more when we come back. So as we finish up today, Hunter, thank you so much again for coming in. Where can people learn more about Maker City, to be a part of the church, to see what's going on there?
Yeah, MakerCityChurch.com. We're just Google MakerCityChurch.
Yeah, it's pretty simple, right?
Yeah, it is.
It's interesting that we even ask that question anymore, but every show I listen to, they're like, where can people learn about you? It's like, same place you can learn about everybody. Yeah. Google. I thought my dad has a flip phone, no internet. No smartphone. When he calls me, he has to stand next to the kitchen window to get any service because he lives so far out. And he'll call me and he'll say, "Can you get on the Googles and look up?" And I'm like, "That is not that's not what it's called." But yeah, I can probably look that up for you.
And so in the Facebook right now,
right? Yeah, we're in the Facebook. And so it's funny. He keeps up with me through friends of his that have Facebook. And so they're like, he's like, "So and so said you posted something on the." And I was like, yeah, I did, I guess. And so, so they can find Maker City, of course, online. Currently you're in a pretty cool series that I'm going to get to be a part of, coming up in October. Talk us, we just have a couple minutes quickly about, what this series is focusing on. Obviously it's focusing on the gospel, but what this series is kind of, pointing us to.
Yeah. So it's called What's Your Type? It's a relationship series essentially, on the surface. It's a gospel series, and we're just looking at, relationships and the gospel through the lens of the Enneagram, which is actually an ancient Christian tool, personality test tool. Really, really beautiful tool. It doesn't put people in a box. It actually reveals the box that we find ourselves in. It does that in a beautiful way because it doesn't just talk about like, well, here's your strengths or here's the way you behave in this situation. It actually begins to kind of help you uncover some of the motivations and core fears that we have that just are innate in us, but also just stuff that happens to us when we're really, really young that begins to form a narrative in us. You know, because when we're really young and something happens to us, we don't interpret that as, well, that person is struggling with that. We interpret everything in light of us, right? So if your dad has, you know, if it was a situation where there was a father who had an alcohol issue, it wouldn't be my dad has an issue. It would be I'm the reason my dad has an issue. Like that's the narrative that happens in us. And the Enneagram can help us uncover some of those false narratives. And then it can give us a picture of the true narrative of the gospel. And so that's really kind of how we're looking at it. We're looking at the series through the lens of what are some of the false narratives that kind of happen in us, and each of us have a different one. And then how does the gospel come in and change that narrative? And then ultimately, then how does that change our relationships, right? So how is the false narrative affecting our relationships? And then how does the gospel change our relationships? And it's really, really been a powerful series because it is so, so deeply personal. It's not just like tips and tricks on like, hey, you know, talk a little bit more, go on date nights, you know, super practical stuff, which is great. But really, ultimately, it's about like maybe some of the struggles that we have relationally, and not just romantic relationships, but all relationships come from a place where we're not as aware of our own insecurities, or where we're not aware of our own just, you know, whatever you want to call it, idiosyncrasies. We're not sure how we're coming across, right? And so if we can become aware of how we're coming across, why we're coming across that way, and maybe how the gospel could transform that, I think that would change everything.
There's nothing better and more convicting than doing something and immediately going, oh no, that was definitely not the healthy side of who I am.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And having to kind of flip that and go, I need to not only repent, I need to apologize.
Yeah.
Because of that, and at least now I know why I did it.
Yes.
But let's go from there. And the book that I just finished is amazing because it says how it presents itself in kids. And so now as a dad to four, I'm like,
wow,
watching my kids and going, okay, does this explain some things that they can't explain to me why they're feeling this way?
Yeah.
So it's an awesome series. You can of course watch it. Y'all stream it live on Facebook and other places as well.
We are in the Facebook.
And so we're looking forward to that. Also in December 6th, we're going to have a benefit concert over at Maker City, selfishly because I said it's the prettiest church in the city. And so we're going to have a concert there. We're ready for rain, and we'll be talking about that in the near future. But man, thanks so much for coming out and taking some time. Appreciate you and love the story of adoption. And I want the world to hear that story, because if we hear that story, it's going to point us to Jesus and the gospel. And it's an amazing thing. Thanks so much, man.